McQuiggan, also from Penn State, Amber Vail, and David Demers on the end. And they have combined presentations to really give us a great in-depth look at faculty professional development. So without further ado, I will let them get started. We hope to have this be a very interactive session. You'll see that there's a microphone about halfway down the aisle. We are being recorded this morning, so when you're feeling interactive and responding, having questions or input, if you would stand and use a microphone, I know they would very much appreciate that. So without further ado, Carol, will you be starting us off?
We just decided that I will. I am Carol McQuiggan. I'm part of Penn State University. I live at Penn State Harrisburg, which is the capital of Pennsylvania. And we're also a college of Penn State University. It's complicated. But there at Penn State Harrisburg, I manage the Faculty Center for Teaching and Instructional Technology. Faculty professional development for online teaching is just one of my responsibilities there. So today, I'm going to introduce you to the essential attributes of faculty professional development programs. That's something near and dear to my heart. And then Amber and David will introduce you to their Bay Path College Excellence in Online Education Initiative and go through the three tiers of that program. Throughout the program, we will integrate the essential attributes to their program. If you're one of the first 50, you got a handout at the door. And if you did not, that resource is on our session website. Amber and David will talk about the successes of their program, and then we'll conclude and have time for questions. All right, the essential attributes. If you look at your handout, you'll see that I have the attributes there. And this was born through a research project that I did. What I found was that faculty professional development programs, and not just for online teaching, overall, have historically lacked a guiding theoretical framework and or even developmental model. So they're just born. Sounds like a good idea. Yes, faculty need this, they need that, but there's no theoretical framework holding that program together. Within the last 15 years or so, faculty are beginning to be recognized as adult learners. Imagine that. Faculty are adult learners. Did you ever think about that? And what does that mean? So I did a literature review and did some action research implementing an adult learning theory model, theoretical framework, to build a faculty professional development program to prepare my faculty to teach online. And as I was doing that lit review, I reviewed 14 different faculty professional development models and looked for features that seemed to lend themselves to adult learning. And through that review, I looked at, if you flip your handout over, you'll see the resources I really relied on. Malcolm Knowles' 6 assumptions about the adult learner, 6 strategies to, 6 strategies by Lawler and King to use as a rubric to guide the design and development of faculty professional development, and 4 action principles for effective faculty professional development suggested by Gallant. So I used those resources as I went through those 14 models, and from those came those 12 essential attributes that I built into my model. So we'll use those as Amber and David go through their faculty program initiative and see where you can find those attributes within there. So I just want to mention that incorporating an adult learning perspective into your faculty professional development programs could begin by using these essential attributes. You were greeted at the door, someone said good morning to you, you were handed a resource. That's on the essential attributes. So practicing what we're teaching starting right now. And also to those at a distance, you know, as we get into the interactive part, do feel free to also participate. Okay. And there we go.
Thank you, Carol, and good morning, everyone. My name is David Demers. I'm the Vice President for Academic and Administrative Technology at Bay Path College. Before we get started talking about our Excellence in Online Education initiative, what I wanted to do is give you a little bit of context. And I thought a good way to start would be to show you a little slide here, which is going to indicate the tremendous growth we've seen in terms of the online seats that we serve on an annual basis. We started offering online courses at Bay Path College in 2005. The chart may be a little hard to see, but if you take a look at the lime green colored bars, those are a factor, or reduced by a factor of 10. But you can see in 2005, we started by serving around 150 online seats in different online courses. And just through the period of 5 or 6 years, we have seen tremendous growth. We're now serving well over 2,300 online seats on the college campus. What does that mean? Well, that means that we have to come up with a way to support the faculty who are going to be teaching these online courses. We have to have a very robust faculty development program. So in 2007, as we started to see this little bit of a boom, if you will, in terms of our enrollments, we actually formed the Center for Distributed Learning. And my colleague Amber Vail was the one-man operation, if you will, on that Center for Distributed Learning staff. And she's going to share with you some of the strategies that she put into place initially. But the one that we did first was we developed a faculty orientation to online education course. Professional development opportunity for faculty, whether they've taught online or not, it is mandatory. They have to complete that course before they teach an online course. And we have seen some positive results as a result of putting that course into place. So beyond just having an orientation course for the faculty, we wanted to have additional support services as well. We knew that just offering a course was going to be a good first step, but we needed more. So we actually developed a three-tiered program. Extending from the faculty orientation to online education course, we also built on a mentorship component. So this gave faculty the opportunity, new faculty I should say, the opportunity to go into a colleague's course, somebody who has been experienced in teaching online and is familiar with the way that we do it at Bay Path College, and actually be a little bit of a fly on the wall, if you will. I'll talk a little bit more about mentorship as we go through the presentation. But in addition to that, we also built a variety of ongoing support services for our online faculty. For instance, we handle all technical troubleshooting calls that students may have. We also have a very proactive role within our department called the Online Student Support Coordinator. And this individual is almost like an advisor for the student. They stick with the student throughout their online career, but they are responsible for being proactive and reaching out to students to find out if they're having any struggles. They'll notice if they are not showing up in their online discussions, and they will reach out and find out why. And they'll work with the faculty to resolve any problems that they might have. So we feel very confident that this three-tiered approach has been very successful, and I'll share some of those successes with you toward the end. So the goals of the Excellence in Online Education Initiative are really fourfold. We want to ensure that there is course quality. We want to make sure that our students have as high a quality online learning experience that they can get anywhere else in the world. We also want to improve the student experience. We want to make it as seamless as possible. We want to eliminate the intimidation factor of learning in an online environment. We also want to make sure that faculty understand that if there are any differences in online learning pedagogy, that they are aware of it and they know that going into or as they start to begin their teaching career in an online arena. And we also prepare faculty for being successful in the online arena. How many of you teach online? Can I just see a show of hands? All right. What's the biggest challenge? If I were to poll the audience, I would say probably maintaining or monitoring online discussions, keeping them going, keeping them on focus, probably takes a lot of your time. So we have strategies that we built into our orientation course to help faculty understand what those challenges are. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, Amber Vail, and she's going to share with you the first tier of this approach, which is the faculty orientation course.
Good morning. As was mentioned, I'm Amber Vail, and I'm the Director of Academic Technology and Online Learning at Bay Path College. To start off by talking about the faculty orientation course, just a little bit of background. As David mentioned, this was started in 2007. And at that point, we were very small. We had a small number of online courses, not a lot of faculty. So at that point, the orientation was developed, but it was very different than it is today. We started off with a course that was more self-paced, kind of like an independent study model, where I would work individually with instructors, take them through the content, which was delivered in an online course environment. But it was more of a one-on-one type of course. When a faculty member was chosen to teach online, they would be put into this orientation, and they would go through and learn the content and develop their course. Now the model that we're using is more of a cohort-based model. They go through the course together, as it's offered 3 times a year. It is mandatory for all of our online faculty, whether they've taught online elsewhere or not. This is so we can ensure that all of our online instructors that are coming into teaching our students have the same background, the same knowledge, and the same understanding of what we value in terms of online education. So the focuses of the orientation, we go over our policies, our campus policies for how online learning works at Bay Path. Things like how we would like to have courses structured, some of the basic stuff with as far as the LMS structure, so that there's consistency from course to course in terms of navigation for students. We want to make sure that the faculty understand the pedagogical differences between online learning and face-to-face learning, so that they can be best prepared to teach their online course to their students. We also go over the learning management system and any other learning technologies that they may want to use, and we help them develop an understanding of using these systems and what they can do for them. And it also gives them an experience of what it's like to be an online student. They're going through this course together as a group. They have assignments to complete. They have deadlines. So they get to feel what their students are going to feel when the students are in the class, so they'll know what their students are going through. And as I mentioned, it's a cohort-based model. They go through it together. The lessons, the modules within the orientation are on a weekly basis. Each week there are specific assignments and activities to complete. And in going through these things together and participating in discussions together, it's really a shared learning experience for the instructors. They get to know one another and they work with one another throughout the course of the orientation. Now on this slide, it gives you an overview of the weeks of the orientation and what the basic content is that's included throughout. We start off by giving them a little bit of background into what online education is and how it's different. In the second week, we give them an opportunity to start planning their course. At that point in time, they actually develop the part of their syllabus that goes through and chunks the content. We talk about backward design a little bit. We talk about how they should be structuring their content to make sure that their learning outcomes are met. In the third week, we take a look at pedagogy. So then we're taking them, you now have your structured content. Let's take a look at how you can be teaching this in an online environment. After that, we start getting a little bit more into the LMS itself. Week 4 talks about how to create discussions, assignments, things like that within the LMS, the more technical stuff. In the 5th week, we talk about community building and how it's important to have interaction in an online learning environment. Then we talk about, in week 6, assessments, how to develop assessments for online learners. And in the last couple of weeks of the course, we look at finding additional resources, what kind of online tools are out there to help faculty teach their students in that environment. And finally, we talk about the transition from design to delivery. Now that you've created your course, let's get ready to actually teach it. So we go through that in the final week and give them an opportunity to reflect on what they've learned, talk about the concerns that they might have at that point in time. So the outcomes for the orientation. What we're looking for at this point is to make sure that they come out of the orientation with a fully developed course that's approved and ready to go. And I'll talk about the approval process a little bit in Tier 3. But we give them an opportunity to have time for review of the course, for modifications if necessary, once they've developed everything and put it into place. Another outcome of the orientation is it gives them an opportunity to interact with and meet the staff of our Center for Distributed Learning. And this is the office on campus that provides this ongoing support for online faculty and students. So this gives them the opportunity to meet the CDL staff, to know who's there to help them, so they have a comfort level with reaching out for assistance when they need it. And it also helps the CDL assess the needs of the faculty members. So as we're going through the orientation, the facilitator of the orientation gets to know the faculty members and gets to see where their strengths and weaknesses are, which can help us in supporting them later on when they're actually teaching their course. Maybe we find out that they're not exactly tech savvy and they struggle with using the LMS. We will know that, and we'll know to help them with that as they go along throughout the course. So at this point, I'm going to turn it over to Carol, who's going to talk about how the essential attributes link to the orientation program.
All right, here's your chance to wake up and show me that you're still alive. So take a look at your handout. Amber has described the first tier of the program. Which of those attributes do you feel were illustrated within that program? Now, knowing they didn't use the essential attributes to build it, but there are some of those attributes illustrated in there. Did you recognize anything? What do you think? Tell me something. Active participation. Great. Yeah, at least through discussion. They were actively participating in those discussion forums. It's a required component of the orientation. And they also have to view an online course that's in progress and complete assignments. What else? Yes?
Authentic context.
Excellent, because they're actually working within the environment in which they'll be teaching. Great, good example. Anything else? Yes? Action plan, there is some of that. How did you see that? Hopefully, at least within their head, they had steps that they needed to complete. I agree. Good. Anyone else? Yes. Absolutely. Collaborative inquiry. That at least through the discussion forums, right? They were talking among each other, asking questions they could answer. Was there someone else? Yes. Excellent. Exactly right. Yes. Amber's center is there to support them throughout the process. It does. It's not a one-stop. It continues on. Any others? Hopefully those at a distance are also participating. I felt that they survey the faculty in the beginning, so they do get a feel for their needs, concerns, and goals. They are flexible based on individual participants' needs, so I feel that they, even though there isn't an individualized plan, they do pay attention to each individual and are responsive to it. And I think especially the learning environment, you know, the facilitator interacts in the discussion forums with the participants as well as outside of the online classroom via email or other means of communication, so that one-on-one support is there. And the Amber will be talking, or David, I'm not sure which, be talking about the survey results, and the faculty do feel supported within that environment. So good, I think we hit on a number of those there. So I hope you're getting a feel for things you could look at within your own programs, or if you're building a program, things to consider. And we'll get to the next tier.
Yeah, I have a bit of a confession to make. Amber and I did not have an opportunity to meet or know Carol before yesterday, actually. I know Amber and Carol worked quite a bit through Skype. But what struck me is we brought these two presentations together, EDUCAUSE did ask us to merge them, is that there is some synergy, quite a bit of synergy there, and that we didn't know of Carol's 12 attributes, but when we went and reviewed our three-tiered approach, it was clear that there were some attributes that we called on and put into place. So that was kind of refreshing. It was validated that we were on the right track, at least. So I'm going to talk to you about the next tier, which is mentoring. And beyond the initial orientation, as I mentioned previously, we wanted to provide faculty with the opportunity to gain additional insight into the trials and tribulations of teaching in an online environment. So in this respect, all participants in our faculty orientation to online education course are assigned a mentor. And through that relationship, the new faculty member is able to go into their mentor's courses, their online courses, and be a bit of a fly on the wall. They get to observe that live course in action. By doing that, they can view the asynchronous discussion threads and how the faculty member monitors and facilitates those discussions. They see how students and faculty interact online, and then they're also able to evaluate how their course might be designed. So they might rethink, well, this module I was a little iffy on, but now I'm seeing how this faculty member is able to do it and they're doing it successfully, so let me rethink how I'm going to approach that particular module or assignment. In addition to that, this gives the new faculty member, the mentee in this case, the opportunity to really turn to another resource for questions, perspective on what teaching online is really all about beyond just what we are telling them in the Center for Distributed Learning. Through that relationship, they are able to share best practices, experiences, and strategies. So again, they can rethink some of the strategies or the preconceived notions that they had about their online course coming in, and by discussing it with their mentor, they can come up with maybe a refined or revised way of approaching a particular assignment or problem. So let's take a look at additional attributes. Carol.
Okay, so you just heard about the second tier of mentoring, and there was one attribute in particular that stood out for me here. Let's see if you thought the same one or if you found additional attributes within the mentoring tier. What do you think? Absolutely. Both ways. With the use of the mentor, you're honoring that mentor's experience within the online classroom, and then the mentee gets to also consider their experiences going through the program. Anyone else? Yeah. Online. It's online mentoring. Yes, yeah, so that's the one that was immediately apparent to me, that they're actually in someone else's class, and as part of that mentoring component, they're required to view their mentor's current online course and reflect on what they see. So it allows them to see a course in action and chat and learn from the mentor. Any others that you saw there? Yes?
I think it's, again, authentic context because they're seeing the same thing from a different side.
Correct, authentic context. That's another attribute that's there because they are within that environment in which they will be teaching. Are you waving at me? Microphone?
Reflection,
yes, they do get to reflect, and that was mentioned within the program. They get to view the mentor's course and reflect on what they see, so reflection is part of it. Any others? All right, we'll go on to tier three.
The third tier of our initiative is the ongoing support that's provided to online faculty. As I mentioned before, I said I would talk a little bit more afterwards about the review process. The review process that happens once the courses are completely developed is a two-part process. A member from our Center for Distributed Learning will review the course and look over it for things like the structure, navigation, making sure that everything is set up correctly in the LMS, making sure that everything is in place that is supposed to be in place. But it's also reviewed by a content area expert, usually the program director or the chair for the academic area that the course is within. And because of this two-part process for the review, we're looking at the course navigation, and we're also looking at content to make sure it meets the prescribed learning outcomes. So we're looking at different types of quality to make sure that the course is set up to give students the best possible experience. And through this process, it is very supportive. From our end, when our staff are reviewing the course, they are going to get in touch with the faculty members, let them know if there's something that needs to be revised or changed, offer them suggestions along the way if there's different types of activities that they could use to make sure that it's a good quality course. So we really go through it and work with them. We don't just give it to them and say, make this and we'll tell you if it's good. We give them support throughout the entire process. And also, at the end, this makes sure that the course is ready for delivery. Once this is at the very end of the orientation, when the course is reviewed, we make sure that everything is ready and the pieces are all in place to launch the course for students. And the Center for Distributed Learning also provides support for students, as David mentioned a little bit before, and this also provides assistance for the faculty. The faculty members don't have to worry about things like technical problems with their students. If the student runs into an issue, he or she knows that they can go to the online student support coordinator and get assistance on that technical issue. So the faculty member doesn't have to worry about those types of things. They can just refer the student to the right place if there is an issue that comes up. This lets the faculty members really focus on the content of their course rather than worrying about any technical things that might happen. And also there's ongoing assistance for faculty in technical areas as well as pedagogical areas that are available following the orientation. So once they've completed their training and they're ready to go, their course is approved, and they go to start teaching, we don't just stop supporting them and stop assisting them at that point. We're always there and available to provide any type of assistance they need. So technical assistance, such as if they're trying to figure out how to do something new in the LMS, or if they're just having any problems, we're there to provide assistance for them. And also, if they're looking to create a new assignment, maybe they've taught a course two or three times, and they come to us and say, this works pretty well, but what can I do to make this better, or how can I improve this group activity? We're also there to provide assistance for them in those types of areas, ongoing, as long as they're teaching online for us, so that they have that support behind them so they don't have to worry about any issues that might come up. So at this point, I'm going to turn it over to Carol again to talk about the attributes.
Okay, the tier is called ongoing support. Who does not know which attribute? Okay, I think ongoing support, we can all agree, would be one of the attributes that are illustrated here. Anything else?
Evaluation and revision.
Yes, and that actually will come even more evidently when you hear David conclude about the program, but yes. I had to actually ask them specifically about that. I wasn't sure if that was there. I knew they were evaluating. I didn't know about revision. And he will talk more about that. Any others? Okay, like I said, that one's pretty obvious. Okay.
Moving right along. We feel that this initiative that we put into place, this three-tier approach, has been very successful. And we know that our instructors feel satisfied with the support and the training that we've been providing them. So one way that we've been able to measure that is through an evaluation process. And this starts with the faculty orientation to online education course. So at the end of the process, we do administer an evaluation just as if we were regular teaching faculty, and we take the feedback, we collect it, we analyze it, and we do make modifications or adjustments to the orientation program as we hear back from our faculty. So after 5 or 6 years of this, we feel like we have a pretty good model in place. But I want to share with you some of the feedback that we have received based upon those evaluation scores. So for instance, 84% of our faculty who have gone through the orientation course feel more prepared, or they report that they feel better prepared for teaching online following the orientation. 79% feel that they have that the content that we have provided them, the training that we've provided them, has really contributed to their knowledge of online teaching and learning. 76% of the respondents felt that readings contributed to the understanding of best practices, and we do give them assignments. And lest anyone believe that we have a very willing faculty, they just enjoy doing this additional work, they are somewhat reluctant. So it is satisfying to see that we're getting some positive feedback and that the assignments and the readings that we do ask them to complete are useful at the end. And finally, 76% felt that the orientation experience was valuable for the professional growth. And that's probably the one that we're most proud of. In addition to that, we do ask for anecdotal evidence throughout the entire three-tiered approach. So this is after they have gone through their mentorship experience. Maybe they've called the Center for Distributed Learning for assistance, either with a student or with a strategy that they want to put into their course. So I'm going to just share with you some quotes that we have received from this anecdotal evidence. I'll read them just for the benefit of the people who are listening online. I found BayPath's orientation online education to be more thorough and substantive than the previous training that I received. So this was a faculty member who had taught online previously at another school, and they were forced, their arm was twisted, to go through our program as well. And this would probably be one of those people that was not very happy about having to go through a program, but at the end, they saw the real value in it. Second testimony, I feel that I have the tools I need to get my classes ready and the support if something goes wrong. And again, they know that we're there to help them. They do not have to struggle with their students or with an assignment. They know that they can turn to us and we are there to help. And lastly, I cannot say enough about what the CDL means to me as a faculty person and to the students in my classes. So let's see if we can match some attributes.
All right, did you see any attributes evident in the last tier? Evaluation and revision, yes. They regularly make changes to their program based on the participant feedback. And Amber shared with me that most recently they've changed from a self-paced model to a cohort-based model, which you heard them mention in the beginning. They collect feedback through surveys before and after the program and periodically after the participants have taught a course to assess the benefits of the orientation and determine what else they would have liked to learn, what could have been improved, and what else that, and how they feel about the ongoing support. So they do use that attribute within the program. So I'm wondering, for those of you who have been through faculty professional development programs or who manage faculty professional development programs, what type of attributes do you use? What examples do you have? What do you feel is missing in your programs? What could you build in? Silence. Yes. Can you go to the microphone, please? Thank you.
Oh, thank you. We have a well-developed faculty training for those that teach online or in a blended format. However, we do not have a mentoring program, and that is something that we're looking to initiate next year in conjunction with the academic colleges. So I was interested to hear about the mentoring. We have a large group of adjuncts, about 1,500, and so we're targeting that for new adjuncts initially. So we have a lot to learn about how to do that. Mm-hmm. But I was very interested to hear your work on that because you can train individuals, but it really is a different world. And we have a lot of resources. We have a lot of support. Our course development process is done separately. So, you know, that is well defined as well. But I think the mentoring is very valuable.
Thank you. And the mentoring does help to tie in the recognition of faculty needs, use of faculty experience. I think it also enhances the learning environment that they do feel more supported with the mentor available. Hopefully, often mentorship programs build in some reflective components, so that's another attribute, certainly. Annie?
I help to teach one of the professional development programs at Penn State, and I think the takeaway I'm really like about your program is that you're introducing them to that ongoing support. You know, they said they're really getting to know your staff through the program. I think our program made a point of having faculty teach faculty, and I'm now thinking that might not necessarily be the great thing we thought, because they're missing that opportunity to have that relationship, begin to build that relationship with the people who are going to be actually supporting them. Instead, they get me, who they're never going to have to interact with again, because I'm just another faculty member across campus. Now, the mentoring would be a way I could have that relationship, but I like your approach in your program of having your staff be the ones who you're teaching the course. I wondered if you could speak a minute about that. You said it's mandatory, and you obviously have some people kicking and screaming. How do you get them to participate and really be active participants? They somehow must have assessments they have to complete in order to kind of get credit for completing. I wonder if you could talk about that a bit more.
You might need to go up.
In order to get faculty members to participate, it is mandatory, it is required that they take this course. So when they're hired to teach online for adjuncts, or when a full-time faculty member makes the decision to teach online, they are told by their program director or their chair that this is a requirement, this is something that they have to take. So some of them do come in reluctant, not wanting to take the course. Sometimes we have to really chase after them when they get started. In the beginning, I was the one who facilitated the orientation. Now we have an instructional designer on staff who facilitates it while working with the instructors when they build their courses. But whoever the facilitator is kind of responsible for keeping an eye on the attendance of the faculty members, chasing after them if necessary. We've had times where we've had to go to the chair or program director and say, hey, this person's not participating. Can you help us out? Can you get them involved? So, you know, at some point, sometimes they're slow to start, but we'll get them into the program and get them going through it. And then at the end, hopefully for the most part, they have been successful and completed the things that they need to complete.
One thing with that, if it wasn't entirely obvious when we went through it, the key deliverable for completing the orientation course is that their first online course is done. That is very important in our eyes. We don't want the faculty member struggling with developing the course as they are teaching it, particularly if they are a first-time online instructor. That's a different philosophy from school to school. So that's where we get a lot of the resistance, is that, oh, I've taught online before. I like to do my modules weekly. We at least want them to have the complete framework in place so that when they get to the point where they are interacting with their students, that's what they focus on, not building the content for week 8 or week 9 as they are approaching it.
Following up on that a little bit, I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about how you got the program to be mandatory in the first place, if you know what I mean.
Sure. Actually, when the Center for Distributed Learning was first formed in 07, we were part of academic affairs at that point. Now we're a part of a merged organization with IT support. But at that point, we were part of academic affairs, and it was the dean of the graduate school who came up with the idea to form the Center for Distributed Learning. And when she did this, she had the vision that we would have a required orientation course for faculty. So it came down from the leadership, which is how we were able to move it in that direction.
I'm sorry, as a follow-up, I was just curious, for those of us who do not have a mandatory requirement, any suggestions just based on your experience about how we can implement optional programs?
At my previous two institutions where I was at, we did not have mandatory programs, but we did have a very similar structure to our orientation program. We did ask the people complete it, but obviously we didn't have the authority to say that you have to complete it. In that case, what you really have to do is focus on the value that you're adding and the support that you will be able to provide them if they were able to go through this program. So it really becomes a sell job at that point. But where you'll have the most benefit is if you have somebody like Anne who has shared that's her job as a faculty member. So you want to get faculty members who have gone through the program, who are good online educators, so that they can speak with their colleagues to say, this is important that you go through this. It's a little bit different than the regular classroom experience, and these are the things you're going to learn, and we think it's worthwhile. So if you focus on that, you're better prepared for success, I think. And then take your provost to lunch. And
I also have to agree with that. It's not mandatory at Penn State. And we really do rely on word of mouth. At Penn State Harrisburg, faculty know that they are supported at the faculty center. They come in and they get support no matter what. They don't have to run around to different offices. It's a one-stop shop. They come there and we're ready to help them. Not easy to scale, but that's what faculty want and that's what they receive. We exercise these attributes every single day in every single faculty professional development program we run. And that is what is making an impact on the increase in numbers of participants in our workshops, that it's an ongoing thing. And it seems to be, faculty have been very responsive to it. You still have folks who don't show up, and typically it's those who need it most. Do you have any other questions?
When a faculty member goes to design their second course, do you ask them to participate? Do they come to you willingly? How do you make them?
When a faculty member develops a subsequent course, they've already taken the orientation, so they're not required to go through that part of it again. But we do go through the same course review process that happens at the end of the orientation. So before the start of courses comes up, we have a calendar that lets us know a few weeks ahead. We send out an email to all the faculty teaching in that particular session, let them know, here's the deadline, your course needs to be in place at this particular time, and then we'll go in and review the course and work with them through the same kind of review process. If they're developing a brand new course, it takes a little more time. If they're just teaching the same course again, we'll just make sure that they've set up things correctly in terms of changing their dates and all that kind of stuff. But it's a much simpler process after the first time. And there are always stragglers. We'll tell them that the course needs to be ready. It's generally 4 weeks before the class starts. We'll tell them it needs to be ready by a certain point, and we'll go in, and usually at that point about half of them aren't ready. And then the instructional designer kind of chases after them and gets them to get their content in place. And we always have everything ready by the time the courses start. That's why we kind of have to backtrack it so far. But the courses go through that process, the same review, just not the training again.
Sorry, I was just wondering what the incentive is for the mentors.
Actually, at this point, there really is no financial or any kind of incentive given. It's kind of out of the goodness of their heart. These are faculty members who, the ones who've been doing it, they've been teaching online for us for a while. They love what they're doing. They've enjoyed the process, and they've just been willing to open up their class and allow others to come in. So thankfully, it's worked out well for us in that regard. We haven't actually had to look to provide any monetary rewards or anything like that.
I'm wondering if you all provide any training for the mentors other than certainly their regarded experience with the program. Have you ever considered that or had a need for it?
That's not something that we've done. We've basically just given them some basic guidance, kind of a list of here's your roles, this is what we're asking you to do. Check up on the faculty member, make sure they're logging into your course, make sure that you make yourself available, send them a welcome message to let them know you're there to help them with questions, those types of things, but there isn't a formal training process for them at this point.
I wonder what you do. Every semester we have a few people who are appointed in the days before the semester begins, or maybe the day after the semester begins. And so how do you approach a fast-track version of what you do?
So you mean for people who are hired to teach the course at the last minute?
Correct.
Yes.
Well, that never happens.
Yes, unfortunately that happens all too often. I've been working with the chairs and the program directors to educate them on the value of our orientation the right way and that we prefer to do it this way, but there are always people who are brought in last minute. Someone backs out or they add a course section, enrollment's too big, they need another section, that kind of thing. So we still have the original version of the orientation that we started with, the one that was self-paced, and we call it our fast-track version. So if someone does come in at the last minute, we'll put them into that version of the course. They won't have the interaction with their peers. They won't have the opportunity to participate in online discussions like the ones who go through the full version. But the content itself is there, and the facilitator works with them as kind of a one-on-one independent study course. So we do have that available. We just prefer not to use it unless we have to.
One more question. Do you pay adjuncts for going through the training?
They're not paid for the orientation itself, but they are paid a stipend for developing the course. Any other questions?
Quickly, follow up on that real quickly. You said adjuncts are paid a stipend for developing a course. Are full-time faculty paid a stipend for
yes.
developing new courses?
Yes, all instructors are paid a stipend for developing a course.
Sure. We wouldn't be alive. And also, money is a good incentive. Obviously, if resources are constrained, that becomes a challenge for you to fight the upper administration to make sure that you are able to provide stipends. But it is a wonderful tool for us to be able to use to say, hey, this might be worth your time.
And, in these days, sometimes money is not available. Annie and I had done some survey research of all of the faculty teaching online at Penn State's World Campus, and when we asked about incentives and barriers, we were surprised that money did not rise to the top. It was actually support. They wanted support.
Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.